Hello and welcome back to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the patient voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Indeed, Matthew, how are we?
Not too shabby at all. We are back. Richard, we're back.
It's been a while. How do you feel?
Do you think we can pull off that opening music? Do you think that worked?
I mean, I was kind of hoping you were going to sing.
I could do, mate, but you don't often like it when I sing, so I'm not going to do it on this occasion. But we are, mate. We are back. It has been a long couple of months. We've been away for good and valid reason, I should add. Some off-the-field issues, I think, is what the top line would be in a headline on a newspaper or something.
So Sky Sports News, the little banner, it would just be that. We don't need to... Yeah, I think I go with that.
Due to unforeseen circumstances. Mm. But we are back. You have been very patient, so I thank you for that. And oh my word, mate, so much has gone on in the goalkeeping world.
It has. I mean, we're going to go through this today. So just to let everybody know, we're going to be back in full flow as of next week. We'll be doing hopefully two per week between the sticks, and we're going to have our feature interviews, all the usual stuff, and we'll give more information in due course. But for now, yeah, we're going to do a bit of a roundup of everything that we've missed, and it has been a crazy couple of months in the world of goalkeeping.
So it has, and we're going to kind of flip things here, because forever I've been the butt of jokes on this podcast between you and our esteemed guests that we've had. There you go, Stato. Yes, David Coles, are you listening? Where I have been ridiculed for my research and the fact that I've perhaps paid far too much attention to the little intricacies of goalkeeping. But we're flipping it. I've tasked you, because I've been away for a couple of months or so, I've tasked you with basically inundating me with all the goalkeeping goodness that has occurred. So, Richard Lee, it is going to be over to you, and I'm going to let you basically fill me in on what's been going on.
Indeed, yeah, we're going to touch on, in fact, it's been so much, Premier League and Championship mainly. Obviously, there have been lots of stuff going on and lots of moves in League One, League Two. We're going to touch a lot on Premier League and Championship today, because I've had a bit of a bird's eye view of it in the last couple of months. I've seen it, how it's all played out, and it is like I'm trying to think what it's like, because you see one opening and it's like dominoes. One thing happens and then all of a sudden three or four things happen at the same time. And even towards the end of the window, Wayne Hennessy getting an unfortunate injury, and all of a sudden that set off a little chain reaction as well of different bits and pieces that have happened. So you're going to tee me up with a few of the things that have happened. Hopefully I'll give a little bit of an insight from my perspective, a few ideas, a few opinions as well. And as always, let us know your thoughts. I know you guys have been very patient, but I know that you're all out there on Twitter, and do let us know your thoughts on what we're talking about today.
Absolutely. On Twitter, Richard?
Yes, and on... I've forgotten. It's been so long.
He's already forgotten it. He never used to do it, and I'm trying to get him to do it now, but he's not going to. On Twitter, at GK Union. On email, hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Let's get into it. Okay, you furnished me with a list, Richard, and I got quite excited when you sent me this. So we're going to go through it one after the other. And like you say, with the snowball effect, the domino effect that's gone on, so many of these are going to link in to the next one. But we're going to start Aaron Ramsdale. You've written big move and big shoes to fill.
I have indeed. So look, I know a lot of you guys, you'll know a lot of what's happened. But again, today is about giving some different thoughts on stuff that we've seen, the goalkeeping world, how we've seen it. So the Aaron Ramsdale one for me is a fascinating one. I think the fact that Dean Henderson did as well as he did last season, Aaron Ramsdale, fantastic season for Bournemouth. But of course, you're now stepping into the shoes of somebody who's done brilliantly for them over the last couple of seasons. Obviously, promotion to the Premier League, solid season, fantastic season for Sheffield United in the Premier League. Now, my thought before Aaron Ramsdale makes this move is this is going to be a tough season for Sheffield United. Not that they're weaker than they were last season. I don't think they are. But how many times do we see it the second season? Not just for players, but for teams also. Brilliant last season. Can they keep up that level of performance this season? Now, all of a sudden, you've got a new goalkeeper. Someone like Aaron Ramsdale. So much pressure for such a young goalkeeper. Now, I want to say off the bat, I'm a massive fan of Aaron Ramsdale. I've watched him at Chesterfield, the few games he played there. I actually went and watched him live quite a bit, playing for Wimbledon. The great escape that Wimbledon had. Wimbledon fans absolutely love him. And last season, I think he might have even been player of the season for Bournemouth. Brilliant season he had for them, despite relegation. So I think, look, great move for him. Obviously a move back, because he was at Sheffield, of course, before he went to Bournemouth. I'm slightly concerned because I think that ideally you want to, as a goalkeeper, you want to join a vehicle that is heading in the right direction. Now, it's not that I think that Sheffield United are heading in the wrong direction, but I just think that regardless, this is going to be a really tough season for them, given the heroics of last season. Now, I'm pleased at this point that we're recording this, he's had a positive start. Even though the team have had a negative start and they're right down there, he himself has had a positive start, put in a few good performances. He certainly started to win a few fans. And I think as long as he can maintain that mentality, because I do think they're going to have a tough season, as long as he can maintain that mentality and keep getting the plaudits that he's getting, then he'll be fine. It might just be difficult that once again, Aaron Ramsdale will find himself in a team that are down the bottom of the league. Hope I'm wrong. I'm sure Sheffield United fans will have their thoughts on that. But, you know, it can be difficult for a goalkeeper where all of a sudden, when a mistake or two does creep in and you're in a team that's losing, opinion can shift very quickly. So that's my concern for him.
Now, Aaron Ramsdale has obviously gone to Sheffield United because Dean Henderson has stayed with Manchester United. This was a topic that came up week after week last season on the podcast. He is now the number two at Manchester United. Sergio Romero is still at the club as number three. We're going to get on to the other goalkeepers that remain at Manchester United as well. But Hendo, he's stayed with Manchester United.
He has. Obviously, so many rumours in the summer as to what was going to happen. Was De Gea going to move on? Obviously, they've both stayed, which I know Gary Neville's come out and been quite vocal about this potentially causing a problem. So far, it has to be said, David De Gea, I think, has started the season well, and he's had to because Dean Henderson, the couple of games he's played in the Cup, have been very, very good. And I think that he's ready and waiting. And you felt like before where, and I kind of look at it as like an amount of credit that you have as a goalkeeper. Now, some goalkeepers got so much credit, it's going to take a long time for that credit to be eaten away. Well, look, I think it's fair to say over the last couple of years, the credit that De Gea has built up will have been eaten away to an extent, given some of the mistakes he's made, some of the tough times he's had over the last couple of years. The fact that you've now got Dean Henderson, who the English press certainly are keen to push, because I think he is going to be a serious contender to Jordan Pickford, it's going to be interesting as to when De Gea does make a mistake or two, how many mistakes has he got before they make that switch? And the fact that Dean Henderson, huge credit to him, when he's played this season, he's played very, very well. He's done all that he can. So he's there. He's ready. He's waiting. I do wonder what his mentality is like now, because where I give Dean Henderson a lot of credit is that he's always been a number one. You know, he's always found a way to be on loan, to be on loan as a number one. He's climbed every single league. He's been brilliant everywhere he's been. But now it's the ultimate test. We've seen it before. Ben Foster being a good example at United, where you wonder, had the timing have been slightly different, given how good Ben Foster is, would he have established himself as United's number one? Because quite often, as a young goalkeeper going into a team like Manchester United, you might only get one chance. So is Dean Henderson ready? Personally, I think he is, but I just think the timing of which they make the switch is very important. That's if they even do make the switch. De Gea's still got several years left on his contract, so it's certainly not a given.
What I find interesting with this one as well is that everybody, bar perhaps Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, to a ex-player, to a manager, to a pundit, even to current players, Kasper Schmeichel came out at the back end of last season and said, I think Dean Henderson should go on loan for another season, and then he'll be ready for Manchester United. But they've gone against the grain, and he stayed.
I think he should have gone on loan. And I'll say that openly. I think that, and I agree with Gary Neville on this, he did make a comment that they've caused an issue for themselves. And they already have, because they've got Romero there as well, who's obviously not happy. I've actually counted, from what I understand, they've got 8 first-team goalkeepers there, genuinely.
Go on in.
They've got, I'll see if I can name them. So we've obviously got De Gea, Henderson, Romero, Grant. There's then Bishop, who I've got at the moment as 8th choice, by the way. But he's very, very good, Nathan Bishop. You've got Kovar, who's gone on loan as well this season. And there are 2 others that are going to come to me any second now. So I've got 8 goalkeepers. Do you know who the 2 others are?
I can give you one.
Go on.
Huddersfield, he's gone on loan too.
Yes, Pereira, that's right. I forgot about that one. There's one more. I've got it written down. I've got a spreadsheet of goalkeepers at home. I mean, I call you Stato, but I'm probably a bigger geek. I think they've got more professional goalkeepers than any other team. I believe it's 8. There's one that I'm missing. In fact, that could be a Twitter question, or get in touch on social media. Who's the goalkeeper that I've missed?
Nice. Okay. Do you think if you're Nathan Bishop, it's satisfactory to say, do you know what, I'm eighth choice at Manchester United. I'll take that.
Do you know what, I'm probably being a bit harsh to him there, because he made the move from Southend to United, and I believe he's done brilliantly. Bits I hear from behind the scenes, I think he's about to sign a new long-term contract. We'll see him on loan soon, and he's a name that we'll see, because he is a very, very good young goalkeeper. I can see him going on loan possibly in January, and I think he'll be back on the radar then. Going back to the point before, though, I think Dean Henderson should have gone on loan. I think one more season to a different club. Nothing at Sheffield United, but I think different surroundings, different environment. I think that would have been good for him, because I do think at some point this season, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to have a headache. There's going to be a moment when that switch happens. And can you see David De Gea being a number two?
Never going to happen.
Not going to happen. So I think he has created a headache. I saw it last season. I've used this example before, but Stoke City, great example. We had Federici, Butland and Adam Davis, three first-team goalkeepers, three goalkeepers who should be starting top-end championship, that in the end were all fighting out for a spot, and it ended up being a bit of a catastrophe for, well, certainly for Butland in the end, who is someone we're going to talk about at some point in this podcast.
Well, I tell you what, it's seamless, there, Richard. It's almost like we've rehearsed it. Okay, we'll go on to Stoke and Jack Butland, who's back in the Premier League. And there's more to come from this one. And this is a move that you were not involved in, but you knew a lot about what was going on.
Yeah, well, some of the goalkeepers that I worked with were involved in this little merry-go-round that happened. And it was an interesting window for goalkeepers. And I'll say this as a general, in that nothing seemingly happened, then loads happened, then nothing again. And then at the very end of the window, Wayne Hennessy, unfortunately, got himself a serious injury for Wales. Adam Davis came on in that game and did very well. But Wayne Hennessy is now out for 4 to 5 months, I believe, I've heard. I think it's come out in the press that he's out for that long. So that then meant that Crystal Palace had to act. They only had Henderson there as the other professional goalkeeper, so they needed somebody else to help bolster that. There was a few names in the running because there's so many goalkeepers out of contract, probably more than I can ever remember. So the likes of Lee Camp, Andy Lonigan, Nicky Maipar, Rob Elliott, just to name a few. I think I counted 19 established goalkeepers that currently are out of contract. Jordan Archer being another one. So anyway, they obviously decided to go for Jack Butland, which made sense. Roy Hodgson obviously worked with him at England. I think for Jack, given that he wasn't playing at Stoke, given that he has had the good times before in the Premier League, he's obviously a very, very good goalkeeper and he needed a change. This gets him back in the Premier League. It gets him that fresh start. So I do think for him, this is ideal. It gives him the opportunity at some point to get back into playing in a Premier League team. It is a different environment. You could argue this change should have happened a little while ago, because certainly at Stoke, the last sort of year or so was a tough season for him. And you kind of get the impression maybe outstayed his welcome there, which wasn't his choosing, I don't think. I think really it should have happened a year or two before. I mean, there were strong links with Aston Villa, I believe, a year before. And in hindsight, that would have made sense for everybody. In the end, it has happened, and I'm pleased for him.
Angus Gunn, as a result of that move, has gone to Stoke, but not as a number one. Adam Davies has maintained his spot. Brilliant resurgence back to form for him at Stoke. But Angus Gunn goes from Southampton, having not played since conceding 9 goals to Leicester midway through last season. He's gone to Stoke.
Interesting one. Really interesting, because then, of course, Stoke needed to act. They've got a couple of really good young lads. One who's out on loan at Doncaster and another one who's now going to be their third choice. So they needed to bring someone in, and there were a few names that were floated and you did wonder which direction they'd go. Now, for complete transparency, obviously Adam Davis, one of the lads that I work with, he's been phenomenal for them. I think you ask any Stoke fan over the last few months, back end of last season was instrumental in them staying up. Started this season very well. Of course, Wales as well came on for Hennessy. So it looks like he's cemented himself as number two now for Wales, potentially number one with Hennessy's injury. So it's an interesting one from Angus Gunn's point of view, because you've gone from being a number one in the Premier League, being in and around England squads, to going there initially as a two. Now, of course, he's going to hope that at some point he gets his opportunity. But from Stoke's point of view, my only concern for them is that they've gone with the whole two number ones, which, I don't know, you look around and I know people listening to this will say, well, of course, you want two top quality goalkeepers. I think it depends. I think often when you've got an established one and an established two, that can be a much nicer dynamic. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out, having both Adam Davis, who is on fire, and Angus Gunn, who will want to play at some point. At the moment, it's okay because it's quite fresh, but I am interested to see how that plays out.
Angus Gunn, of course, formerly with Manchester City, where Zach Steffen, the USA goalkeeper, is now very much in the fold.
Seamless again, Matthew. It's like you haven't been away. And by the way, this is a goalkeeper that came on my radar, would have been about 3 years ago when he was at Columbus Crew.
There we go.
There we go. Watching Columbus Crew in my spare time. But he was...
That's the Brad Friedel connection, I'm presuming. Was there something...
So it was actually... I was doing a bit of consultancy work for a championship club looking for a goalkeeper. And interestingly, I did then name several goalkeepers at the time. Mendy being one, who we're going to talk about as well. Zach Steffen being another. Samba and Notts Forest was another one that came on my radar. So there's a few that came up. Zach Steffen was the one, though, at the time that I was really keen that they tried. And in fairness, the club did then make an approach, but the price tag at the time, I think, was around 3 million. Obviously he ends up going to Man City for a lot more thereafter, and he's been on loan in Germany for the last season. He's now come back into the fold at City. So it's the way that City kind of work. They've brought him in from the States. He's the USA number one, and he will be the United States goalkeeper, you'd think, for the next 10 years or so. I really like him. So to give a bit of an idea, distribution's very good. He's powerful, athletic, incredibly quick. Yeah, I like him. I think that he's not going to be too much of a challenge to Edison this season, I'd say. But we'll get a bit of an idea as to what he's about in cup games, I'm sure. And he's certainly one to look out for.
I like him as well. A personable young chap from what I've seen online and the various interviews he's done. And when he first moved to Manchester City and obviously then went back out on loan, he interacted quite a lot with our tweets, which I thought was brilliant. Now he's properly in at Man City. We've got no chance. There's absolutely no chance. Zach, he's still there, Zach? Oh, blocked. Brilliant. Okay. Thanks a lot. Right, you mentioned Edouard Mendy. I think we waited long enough. Let's get on to this, because Edouard Mendy in at Chelsea. Kepa, still the world's most expensive goalkeeper, completely frozen out.
Yeah, he is. And it's... I mean, I did a thing not so long ago, an interview... Actually, I did an interview with The Athletic a couple of months ago on Kepa, and I was misquoted, actually. I want to just put that out there, because there was a couple of people kind of contacted me and they used a bit of a clickbait headline, it's fair to say, which my point at the time was that I felt sorry for Kepa in that I've been there. A lot of goalkeepers have been there. When things turn, it's very hard for a goalkeeper to turn things back. And the reason being is that it's not like a striker. You go and bang in a hat-trick and then you're loved instantly. Well, for a goalkeeper, you keep a clean sheet. That doesn't mean that everything's well in the world. David De Gea's played a few good games, but you know the moment he makes a mistake, everyone's going to dig up the mistakes from last season, as an example. So for Kepa, I feel for him, because the tide really has turned and you can see his body language. He just looks so fragile. He looks like he's lacking in confidence in a big, big way. I don't think he's necessarily got a manager who's backing him, although in fairness to Lampard, he hasn't been too bad in the press or anything like that. But, you know, I think that you can see he looks like a fish out of water. He looks like he's really struggling with the situation, and something had to happen. They had to bring in a keeper, which they have. You just wonder now, and we spoke about this a lot during lockdown, like what happens to the value of Kepa? You know, you've brought in a keeper for 70, 80 million, whatever he was. Like, what happens to the value? Did Chelsea even care? Maybe they don't. Maybe they take the loss and he moves on. I do think from Kepa's point of view, he has to move on, because I think you've now got to the point where, well, you could try and win the Chelsea fans back, but it's going to take you a long, long time. And actually now, the fact you've got Caballero still there, the fact you've got Mendy doing as well as he has, and he started very, very well, it's going to be a long time before you get your opportunity again. My advice would be move on, start afresh. You are a top, top keeper. I can see there is a top, top keeper in there. Yeah, there's a few tweaks that need to be made. But for me, I think he just needs to go and start afresh, potentially in another country.
You got Mendy, you got Caballero. You've also got Petr Cech, sure. Which is just, I mean, if that isn't the final nail in Kepa's coffin, I don't know what is.
No, I mean, I've seen bits and pieces on this. I get the impression because of COVID, they're obviously worried that all of a sudden, could you imagine if all the keepers came down with COVID and you had a big game, a Champions League game, then yeah, of course, they're going to need to have cover. I mean, could you imagine if Cech lined up one more time? I mean, it would be quite a spectacle. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, just to touch on Mendy, I like what I see. I do. I think that he's kicked on a lot in the last few years. Another great story that he was as good as out the game, for those that have read about him, as good as out the game, and he's come back in a big way. Someone that I did a lot of research on beforehand, and his all-round game is very, very good, and I think that we've already seen glimpses of what he can do, and he's making big saves at big moments, which is a bit of a cliche, but he has done that so far. He's got off on the right foot, and also, going back to what I said before about Aaron Ramsdale, where I worry for him in that sometimes perception is, in fact, all the time, perception's out of your control to a large extent, where Aaron Ramsdale's stepping into huge shoes. He's having to fill the void that's been left by Dean Henderson, and he's got this big price tag on his back. Mendy, on the other hand, if you're going to step into a top four club and want to hit the ground running, well, look, the fact that Kepa's had such a tough time, it's the perfect situation for him to now step in and try and start off in a good vein, which is exactly what he's done.
Nice. Okay, a few more left in the Premier League. And another gent close to you who we've had on the show, a friend of the show, I'm going to say, David Button, has signed for West Bromwich Albion.
He has indeed. And this one went under the radar, I think, to an extent, because it's not going to be huge news when a goalkeeper goes from being effectively a backup from Brighton to a backup at West Brom. But yeah, no, someone that I'm close to. And for me, an interesting one this, because I just think that at Brighton, where you've got Matty Ryan, who is so established, I think that David Button, he went there and the few games he played, the four or five games he played were excellent. But I think to then get ahead of Matt Ryan may be difficult. And I think when you get to a point, you've been at a club for a couple of years and it is kind of set in stone, sometimes it can be a nice idea to move, even if it is effectively and it looks like a sideways move. But what it's now done, it's changed the dynamic at West Brom. They've got three very good keepers, obviously Jonathan Bond as well. There is a three and Sam Johnston playing. But he'll go in there as a two, as he has, and it'll just put a slightly different pressure on Sam Johnston. And it just might be, and in fairness to David Button, the couple of games he's played have been very good. You might have that slightly better chance of playing in the Premier League, you would think, with Sam Johnston. That's nothing against Sam Johnston, but just the fact that the dynamics changed, and it's the first time that Sam Johnson's is trying to establish himself in the Premier League. So it's more based on the law of averages, you know. And this is often when you're making a move as a goalkeeper, and you might have three or four different options, you of course try and choose the one that's going to give you the best pathway. And I think that was the thinking behind this move.
And he's English. You just never know. If you're an English goalkeeper in the Premier League, you just never know.
No, it's so true. And you've got, that doesn't just apply to David Button. There's so many English goalkeepers. And because of this merry-go-round we've seen, all of a sudden Dean Henderson now isn't a number one. So does that now move him further down the pecking order? The likes of Sam Johnston, David Button, very good with their feet. Does that mean they're that little bit closer to Jordan Pickford? Jordan Pickford, who's had some really good games already this season, has made a few mistakes as well this season already, but for England seems to be very much established as number one. Nick Pope didn't get his move. He's still at Burnley, which we're going to touch on now.
We are going to touch on that. And to quickly mention England, that will be a topic for a podcast further down the line as and when England start to play again. I know there's been a few friendlies, but at the back end of last season, when I saw Jordan Pickford, after the season he'd had at Everton, arguably his worst season really since being a pro, lining up as first choice for England, when you consider the season that Nick Pope had, that Dean Henderson had, I just thought, what's the point? If you're another English goalkeeper that isn't Jordan Pickford right now, you must be thinking, what's the point? Because as bad as Jordan Pickford was last season, he was still deemed good enough to be England's number one because of the fact that he can play with his feet. And when we go to Nick Pope, and there was a game on last night as well at the time of recording against Spurs where he had a few moments with his feet and you highlighted them and said that's why he didn't get the move. He did not get the move.
He didn't get the move. And there were so many rumours early on. And seemingly there was no bids made. And I don't know whether that's because Burnley priced him out. And Burnley had a fascinating window. Obviously, nothing happened. It was, you know, no one, apart from one goalkeeper, Will Norris, they brought in as a third choice, which actually one I didn't put on our list. But that was the only thing really they did in the window. For Nick Pope, my worry is, and I'm watching the game last night, and he has made a mistake. I think it was against Southampton. He made a mistake passing out, and they scored. And last night, again, I'm sure he's aware of this, in that he's not bad with his feet, but he's not having to play out all that much for Burnley. When he is, it's not something they're necessarily doing that often. So it's not working how they perhaps want it to work. And more often than not, he is going long. Now, of course, if you're wanting to play your way into the England team, because of how highly Gareth Southgate seems to value playing out, well, then you're not going to have a chance if you're not playing in a team that allows you to show those kind of skills. And you're seeing that more and more with managers, that, you know, we talk about what the goalkeeper looks like. And I know that I speak to a lot of older goalkeepers now, and some that have just lost their head with what's going on in the Premier League and what's going on with goalkeepers in general. But we've seen such a shift that managers would rather have a goalkeeper that makes X number of errors, goalkeeping errors, but providing they're keeping possession 90% of the time, that allows their team to build attack after attack after attack. I can't help but feel that given, and I do agree, look, Jordan Pickford, I'm sure he's the first to hold his hands up and say it wasn't his best season. The fact that he did play those games and he has played thereafter, for me, that then just shows how highly Gareth Southgate values that side of a goalkeeper's game, which has to then be a message to other English goalkeepers. That's a huge thing to focus on. And that's where I think a Dean Henderson at some point will come through. We touched on David Button. We touched on Sam Johnson. The goalkeepers that can use their feet, Aaron Ramsdale. All of a sudden, these types of goalkeepers will soon be a serious challenge to Jordan Pickford. But certainly at the moment, he's got that little bit of credit in the bank. And he's certainly got his nose ahead of him.
Just so tough, isn't it? So tough when you are a goalkeeper whose formative years weren't honed in on playing out from the back. I just find it so, so difficult for some of those goalkeepers. It must be so frustrating. And I was listening to Mikel Arteta talk about Bernd Leno and a mistake that he made recently playing out from the back. And Arteta said, it is what it is. That's the way that I want to play football. That's our style. We'll get back on the training ground and we'll continue to fix it. Bernd Leno being someone who's actually quite adept at playing out from the back. So quite interesting, that one. But to stick with Arsenal, Emi Martinez, who was just a revelation at the end of last season, came in, won the FA Cup. Everyone said, where the hell has this guy been? Reading fans are like, he's been with us. He's been absolutely brilliant. He came in at Arsenal, the back end of last season. He's now at Aston Villa.
Yeah, he is, and for a hefty price tag. And it just shows you how quickly things can change. Now, the reason I found this very interesting, this then goes back to the conversation in regards to Man United, where effectively now they've got two number ones. Stoke City, they've got two number ones. Now, I think that Arteta's had a decision to make, that Martinez has done what he's done, and all of a sudden there is an expectation for him, as you just said, I've just won this, that, the other, and when I've played, I've been excellent, I want to be number one. Now, do you then keep Martinez there and have Leno and Martinez, who both expect to be number one? So that's not going to create a harmonious relationship between the goalkeepers. So I actually give a lot of respect to Arteta and Arsenal for making a decision. They've obviously decided to stick with Leno. And in fairness to Leno, he's done well so far this season from what I've seen. And they made a decision to sell Martinez. And of course, the great thing for them is that the value being so much more than it would have been 6 months prior, all of a sudden he's moving on for a huge price tag. And credit to Martinez, goes to Aston Villa and he's started fantastically well there, and so have Aston Villa. So just the most extraordinary 6 months for Martinez.
I really like that as well. It's a good point that you made, that Arsenal had the courage of their convictions to make the decision to let him go. They, you know, I don't want to say they owed Martinez anything, but they decided to make that decision rather than what we see with a lot of clubs now, just hoarding players because you can.
Exactly that. And I think, and that's where I go back to that point, that I think you can create problems further down the line. You know, they could have just kept Martinez happy, for instance, I'm guessing, and given him a new contract and maybe told him what he wants to hear. And you could look at it and say, great, we've got Leno, we've got Martinez, two fantastic goalkeepers are going to be fighting it out. That doesn't necessarily always mean that you're going to get two goalkeepers who are playing at the very top of their game. It's just psychology. You know, I think there's a lot of goalkeepers out there that want to know they're a number one. There's a lot of goalkeepers out there that are happy being a number two and just stepping in for the odd game. I think there's also a shift in mentality. So they bring in Runnison, for instance. I think I pronounced that correctly. But they bring him in. Of course, he's absolutely delighted to be at Arsenal. So this is huge for him. To be a number two at Arsenal, he's buzzing to be a number two. And if he gets a chance to play the odd game, fantastic. Now, that's a very different mentality to Martinez. If suddenly he'd have had to been demoted to be number two again, you could imagine him turning up to training every day and probably with a bit of a sulk on because, well, I'm the guy that just won the FA Cup. I'm the guy that's just done this, that, the other. So that's where I think I give credit to Arsenal, and they've been able to cash in the way they have. And for Aston Villa, it's worked out quite nicely, who, by the way, might have their own problem, given that Tom Heaton now coming back to fitness, and they've got so many goalkeepers. So it's interesting to see how the dynamic works in different goalkeeping departments. And when you look at some of the top goalkeeping departments this season, and another one we're going to touch on is Tottenham very shortly, but you look at the different goalkeeping departments, the ones that are operating very well and the ones that aren't necessarily operating very well, you do wonder how much of an impact that relationship between one and two has.
Fascinating stuff. Always so good to be back here, Rich. So good. I love hearing this insight. Let's quickly finish on Arsenal because you mentioned Spurs. We'll get onto them and Aston Villa too. We might chuck in another quiz for you there. But Runarsson, Alex Runarsson from Iceland, has come in from Dijon. Only made 13 appearances last season. Like you said, he will be delighted. He wasn't their first choice though.
No, he wasn't. I mean, it was well reported that David Raya was the first choice. And actually, interestingly, from a Brentford perspective, given that Brentford historically have always sold high, bought low, and they've done it over and over and over, they really dug their heels in this time. And they made a point that we are not selling David Raya. They moved on Benrahma, they moved on Watkins. So they got a lot of money for those two. And they made the decision that David Raya was that key to how they played, that it didn't matter what offer Arsenal put in, it was going to be a no. And that dragged on for a while. And in the end, of course, they didn't get their man, Arsenal, so decided to go for Runarsson. So, yeah, no, an interesting situation. And for Brentford fans, quite a positive one that they're now showing a little bit more strength. And I'm saying this obviously as an ex-Brentford player, the fact they're showing a little bit more strength and they're able to hold on to key assets when they need to.
And Spurs, you mentioned him there, Joe Hart. I was delighted with this. And you alluded to this in the summer, if there was a summer, if there was a pre-season break, and you said something tells me that Joe Hart is ready to go again. He just seems like he's got the right type of mindset. And you said, I think he's going to go to a, with all due respect, a bigger club than Burnley in the pre-season.
Yeah, I'm buzzing with this. Brilliant move, as far as I'm concerned. I know a lot of people haven't seen it that way, but I think that, do you know, you look at the options on the table, and this isn't Joe Hart's fault necessarily, but there weren't many options. It certainly wasn't a number one spot in the Premier League. But because of his experience, because of how good he is, there was going to be a top number two slot. And then you look at where you can go. I think to go in as a number two, given that Hugo Lloris, I'm a massive fan of Hugo Lloris, but I can sense that there's been a bit of a shift with Hugo Lloris. At some point, Joe Hart's going to get an opportunity there. Now, if Joe Hart gets an opportunity there and he takes it, he could be number one at Tottenham. He could be number one at a top four club again. Then what happens with your England reckoning? Well, suddenly you're back in the mix. And suddenly you're playing at Tottenham, who are, well, historically, they've always, certainly the last few seasons, finished ahead of Everton. So you're playing at a club that are arguably more successful than the club that the England number one is actually playing for. So now you really are serious competition for him again. I think the other thing that Joe Hart did very well was his PR was good over the last few months. He did the whole showing what he was doing on Instagram, and he looked absolutely ripped as well, which is what you want to see. Plus, we all love a story where someone's been knocked down and they find a way to build themselves back up. So it would just be beautiful to see Joe Hart playing for England again. We'd all love to see that. So I just think that he's played it very well. I think from Tottenham's point of view, they've got arguably one of the best number twos in the league. And at some point, I'm convinced he'll get his chance.
Fulham. Now, this reeks to me of an overseas player thinking, oh, I'd like to live in London. I could be wrong. But Marek Rodak had a very good season last season. Most Fulham fans would concur with that theory, I think. But Areola has come in. He is now the Fulham number one. And I just look back to the last time Fulham were in the Premier League, and we spoke about it again extensively on the podcast. You had Marcus Bettinelli, you had Fabbri, and then eventually you had Sergio Rico, who was the player that they eventually plumped for, who I believe now is at PSG. So it's a funny full circle kind of thing that's happened. But Areola, Fulham's number one.
He is. And look, I'm not going to say too much about Areola, but what I would say is I think it's incredibly harsh on Marek Rodak, because I thought he was excellent last season. I watched a lot of their games, and I'm pretty sure that Fulham fans agreed. So I can't help but feel there is a little bit of deja vu in terms of, as you mentioned, Fulham coming up before and seemingly making certain mistakes. That, for me, is one that there are certain players, I know you don't want to give too much time to players that maybe get you promoted that maybe aren't quite Premier League quality, but for me, Marek Rodak is Premier League quality, hands down. Brilliant last season. So to then get dropped as early as he did, and that's going to cause a bit of unrest, and it's not going to be easy then for Areola to step in and play fantastically well. And of course, they've conceded a lot of goals at this point of recording. So I'm not sure they've made the right decision there. I know they needed to bring someone else in. I know they wanted to move Bettinelli on, who of course has gone to Middlesbrough on loan, but I don't know. I don't know if that was the right signing, or certainly I think to have brought someone in that then goes in as automatic number one, effectively, I would have brought someone in more of Marek Rodak's level and given Marek Rodak a bit more of a chance.
Oh, there is one more.
Go on.
There's one more. There's Villa. You mentioned Villa. Yes. Just because Emi Martinez has gone there. Now, you said Manchester United had 8 professional goalkeepers on their books at the moment. Villa aren't too far behind. And again, something we've spoken about on the podcast before, because when you look at the incomings and the outgoings, there has been so much activity. But right now, what is the situation?
So from what I understand it, you've obviously got Martinez, who has come in, and credit to him, he has established himself over the few games and he's done very well. Tom Heaton is getting fit, will be fit soon. I'm assuming he will then come in as number 2. Jed Steer, I believe, will be a 3. You then add Kalinic and Nyland. I think Kalinic is still there, but I'm not quite sure what's happening. Of course, bought him for a lot of money. I'm sure at some point he'll be moved on, but he hasn't been yet. And Nyland was officially released, which, bearing in mind, he played a few games. Of course, the famous game back end of last season where did the ball cross the line or not? In fact, it did cross the line, and ultimately that kept them in the league. But, you know, so you look at the fact that he's been released and he was playing Premier League football not so long ago. Yeah, really interesting situation. Now, they've really made a statement by bringing in Martinez, I think. And I think it will sort itself out over the next year or so. I mean, you've got a few questions there. I think Kalinic will be moved on at some point. And they've also got a couple of younger lads who are very good as well. But I think then it will just be a question of whether Tom Heaton is happy as a 2. The thing with Tom, and of course someone we've had on the show, brilliant goalkeeper, and unfortunately has had the odd injury. So I guess that's going to be on the minds of the Villa manager, the Villa staff, is that as much as he is more than good enough to be a number 1 in the Premier League, he has broken down a couple of times. Obviously at Burnley he had quite a serious injury, and this is now has been quite a serious injury. So I can understand why they brought in Martinez. It will just be now whether Tom Heaton's happy to transition and be a number 2. And even Jed Steer, is Jed Steer happy to be a number 3? Because when he's played, again, he's done very, very well.
Well, as per usual, Rich, we've spoken far longer than we anticipated, so we're going to rattle through the Championship and then do a kind of a best of the rest from League One and League Two. But in the Championship, you mentioned Marcus Bettinelli there. He has gone to Middlesbrough. Neil Etheridge is the main talking point for me. He is now at Birmingham, and this is a goalkeeper. What, a season and a half ago now, we were talking about massive moves to massive clubs. An international goalkeeper, of course, with the Philippines. He was never going to be in English contention, but he's now at Birmingham.
Yeah, do you know what? It's been the most interesting market. And look, I didn't want to mention COVID too much in this podcast, but it seems like every day it's being mentioned several times. But I think because of everything that's happened, you've seen some really extraordinary things happen in Championship League One, League Two. Certainly the squads are getting smaller. The goalkeeping departments have been hit. You know, clubs are still finding money to buy strikers, but certainly when it comes to goalkeeping, goalkeepers that might have been worth 3 or 4 million last summer seemingly are 400,000 or 500,000 this summer. It's been really bizarre. And two good examples, of course, Etheridge and Butland. Butland being valued at 20-odd million a year or two back, went for a fraction of that. Neil Etheridge, similarly, went for a fraction of that. I think as well it shows how quickly your stock can fall. So with Butland and Neil Etheridge, are they worse goalkeepers than when they were playing in the Premier League? Arguably no. It's not like they've had any serious injuries, but because they weren't playing for their teams, Stoke and Cardiff respectively, of course they're going to be worth that little bit less. But no, the Championship, just to round it up, you had at the start of the window, there were 6 openings, and that stayed consistent throughout. So the 6 openings were Swansea, who went for Woodman, again on loan. Good move for him to get another season's worth of games. Ideal for him, to be honest. Good loan there, and he did very well last season. Marshall went from Wigan, again, top goalkeeper, went from Wigan, David Marshall this is, to Derby, went on a free transfer. Of course, Woodman was on loan. You then have Bettinelli, went on loan, so no money there, but obviously a contribution from Middlesbrough, so no money for that. A loan to Borough. Good for him to re-establish himself. He is a top-end Championship, certainly Premier League goalkeeper as well. He's shown at Fulham, has been in an England squad, so interesting to see how he gets on. Blackburn spent some money. They actually brought in 3 goalkeepers, which was bizarre, really. I mean, Tony Mowbray hasn't had the best relationship, it's fair to say, with goalkeepers. Gave David Rea a bit of stick in the press, gave Walton a bit of stick. So he's never particularly been fond of goalkeepers, let's say. So he's brought in Kaminski from, I always forget whether it was Ghent or Genk, but one of those two. He then brought in Ainsley Pears on deadline day from Middlesbrough. And he also brought in a young Bulgarian lad that we don't know too much about, but that was also a day or two before deadline day. So he's brought in a 1, 2 and 3 at Blackburn. Cardiff, of course, took Dylan Phillips on deadline day. Great signing for them. They've got two top keepers there now, Dylan Phillips and Alex Smithies. Dylan Phillips was a bit of a saga. I won't touch on that today, but that did happen on deadline day. You mentioned Neil Etheridge to Birmingham. Birmingham, who did sign a Spanish goalkeeper from Espanyol. He came in, played one game, didn't go particularly well. So I think they realised that they needed to go for an established number one, which is what they did in Neil Etheridge. Again, got him for a fraction of the price he would have been a year or two prior. So really good business for Birmingham. And he started very, very well, by the way. Lots of clean sheets. I know the Birmingham fans have really taken to him. And the only other move in the Championship as a number one was Rotherham, who went for Blackman, who is still at Chelsea. He's on loan at Rotherham. Other bits and pieces, Pereira went from Manchester United to Huddersfield, but he hasn't been able to get ahead of Ben Hamer as yet. And I'm sure I've missed one or two other number twos that went in the Championship. But that pretty much rounds up the Championship. In League One and League Two, sorry, I'm just firing through it.
Listen, tell you what, Richard Lee is on one. I'm just reclining in my seat right now. You mentioned Freddie Woodman, didn't you?
Go on, you got some questions.
No, I mean, there's no questions. These are pretty much your notes that I'm going off. So we can go right through it, I suppose. And Jamal Blackman is an interesting, wasn't it? 26 now, 14th year on Chelsea's books. It's his eighth loan. It's incredible to think he's still a Chelsea player.
Yeah, it is. But you know what? I actually don't blame him, because some people would be like, oh, surely you just move. But actually, as long as you're racking up games, and where it works for him is that the terms on which Rotherham will have signed him will be very favourable to Rotherham, because they're not going to be paying his full wage. Of course they're not. From Chelsea's point of view, they're happy for him to go and get games, because of course he's got value while he's playing in the Championship. So it kind of works for all parties. So I think a lot of people that say don't stay at the big clubs too long, I get that if you're not playing. But I think where Jamal Blackman's concerned, he's had so many loans. What, Sheffield United, I want to say Leeds, I want to say Wickham Wanderers when he was younger. I'm sure he's been abroad and now Rotherham. You know, the amount of loans that you've touched on there, and he's racked up a decent number of games. So I don't mind the fact that he's still at Chelsea at the age he is. And you know what? You never know what might happen. We go back to Martinez. How long was he at Arsenal before he finally gets his chance? And when you do get your chance, if you get your chance at one of the top four clubs, you're where you need to be. And that's one of the reasons you've got eight goalkeepers at Manchester United, going back to that, because they've all got that dream that at some point they're going to be number one. And if you're number one at Manchester United, that's exactly where you need to be. There isn't necessarily a move up from there, you could argue. So that's why so many of these big clubs hold so many keepers, but also why so many keepers at these big clubs stay at the big clubs.
Okay, on to League One and League Two then, mate. Give me your best rundown, Championship-esque rundown, please.
Yeah, let me have a think, because now that I've said this, I probably can't back it up with as much info. But right, I'm sure I'm going to miss a few here, so by all means, reach out and let me know the ones I've missed. I'm more than happy to discuss them on next week's show. So you've got Nathan Baxter winning at Accrington, but he can't get ahead of young Toby Savin, an 18-year-old at Accrington who's getting a lot of headlines, doing very well. Joe Bursic, of course, England under 21 goalkeeper, went alone from Stoke to Doncaster, has started the season very well for them. Remy Matthews went to Sunderland, although he cannot get ahead of Lee Burge at the moment, who has established himself as a number one there. Other than that, let me think of some of the other big stories. I know there was one or two loans that I believe I've missed. I know that Shrewsbury went for Sarkic from Wolves, although he got injured. So they then brought Iliev from Arsenal. But he can't get ahead of Harry Burgoyne at the moment, who started the season well for them. You've then got other loans. Do you know what? This has tested me now.
Brilliant.
This has tested really me now. And I know there's going to be some other ones that spring to mind any minute soon. So when they do, I will let you know. Kovar went to Swindon. There you go. That's one that I nearly forgot. So an interesting move for him, of course, from Manchester United to get some games there. And League Two, off the top of my head, nothing of note springs to mind, but I know there was plenty of movement in there. So guys, by all means, do let me know the ones that I've missed, and more than happy to discuss them next week.
Billy Crellin is another one. He's on loan at Bolton now from Fleetwood, a goalkeeper that we spoke a lot about with Dave Lucas on that podcast when he was here for an interview. And we are going to speak about the incident at the weekend. And what we're going to do is finish this podcast and then do another Between the Sticks podcast, our first proper analysis podcast since we have returned. We've got plenty lined up, Rich, like you said. We've got a shiny new studio, which is really exciting to be in. We still have Patreon rolling. We're going to have more information regarding our Patreon signups and how we plan to move that forward. Like you said, Monday, Thursday is going to be the plan for future podcasts coming up. Bear with us, because we've got loads going on. It's just going to take a bit of time to get our ducks in a row.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
And I know that we've always finished the podcast, right? And I was listening back to some of the others during lockdown. And I don't know how it started with me saying, this has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Mm. We'll see you next time. It's rubbish.
Okay. Have you got a new one?
Rubbish. Well, I haven't. But I was thinking that you told me how keepers, because I always thought it was just keepers.
Yeah.
But you say.
What do I say?
Keepers.
I don't know what.
Oh, he doesn't know.
What do I say? Well. What do I say?
Isn't it keepers away?
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah.
Is that a common thing?
That's a common thing. That's like, that's a bit of a joke. It's like a running joke when it comes to goalkeeping, because the amount of keepers that will shout it, then realise halfway, I'm coming for the cross. I'm never getting the cross. So they then shout away and then retreat to their line. So you just confuse the life out of your defenders. So this is a running joke in the Goalkeepers Union. Keepers away.
So you confuse me. Because when you kept saying, yeah, keepers away, I was like, keepers don't say away when they I don't get it.
It's the complete opposite commands. Yeah, I've got it, I haven't got it. That's basically what you're saying.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, we're going to finish with that from now on.
Okay, that works for me.
Okay, so I will say keepers and you say away. And you can say it however you want. You don't have to act and make it all dramatic. You can just say away in your dulcet tones.
I'll just say it like I used to say it.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah. All right, well, we'll be back, like I said, with the Between the Sticks podcast. But this has been, for the first time in a couple of months, the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Keepers
away.